Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 15th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Very good. Very good. Glad to have you here. So, D.R., we have spoken in recent weeks of the climate trial up in West Roxbury, where brave people from this area were arrested in what's called a direct action, in which they lay their bodies down inside the trench that was being dug for a natural gas pipeline. They were arrested, and ultimately, the way the trial worked out, they were found innocent by reason of, or they were found not responsible, was a specific ruling, not responsible for any crime. And the argument was that of the necessity defense. And we've talked about the necessity defense, but basically it's the argument that the only way to push back against climate change is to break the law in this nonviolent, peaceful way, to make that statement to stop the dangerous thing that's going to happen. That's all well and good. And I think it's great. And I think more than all well and good, it is the future. I mean, there have been protests around the country. There were the folks out in North Dakota, I think it was, that basically they closed, they're called the valve turners. They closed the valves on a pipeline to, again, claiming that this is the only way they had available to reduce the risk of climate change, is to take this kind of direct action and make the legal case that they had to do it. They should be, that this was a justified civil disobedience kind of thing. So with that backdrop, I noticed an article in Huffington Post this past week that talked about the situation in Iowa. So Iowa, where the Iowa State Legislature has made it a felony, punishable by 25 years in prison for unauthorized and overt acts intended to cause an interruption or impairment of the fundamental service of gas, oil, petroleum, or refined petroleum products. That is to say, if you are conducting direct action in civil disobedience to try to stop a fossil fuel infrastructure from being built in Iowa, they'll put you in the clink for 25 years. Mm-hmm. So don't even think about it, right? That's the message. Did you see anything about that, D.R.?
Yeah, it just strikes me as a on its face unconstitutional bill, just a bill that basically flies in the face of the spirit of the First Amendment, and to try to suggest that it's somehow wrong to engage in protest is on its face ridiculous. This is the brainchild, according to Huffington Post, of the notorious American Legislative Exchange Council. And again, they don't seem to realize the people who cooked up this thing, that it can be turned around to basically, infringe upon, right-wing protests under the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, remember the stories about the Keystone XL pipeline, and how in Nebraska it was conservatives and Republicans on the trail of the pipeline who did not want it. So in other words, if they started protesting, let's say a similar pipeline was in Iowa, and Republicans and conservatives who didn't want it on their property protested on grounds that this was infringing upon their property rights, you mean that the right wingers who came up with this bill would throw other right wingers in prison? I mean, think about it.
Yeah. But I mean, it seems to me it's telling on several levels. One of which is that the ALEC, right, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is basically the mouthpiece of the Koch brothers, right? I think they're the biggest funders of that. And ALEC, if you don't know, this ALEC organization basically writes up bills. Various kinds of bills, and then Xeroxes them and sends them to all 50 state legislatures, and they get somebody in each legislature in each state to propose the bill, and in some level, some joker like in Iowa is going to put that bill in and try and get it passed. Right? In fact, according to this article, it says there were 20 different states have these kinds of bills, anti-protest bills, at least introduced into their legislature. Seems to me that the very fact that the Koch brothers feel they have to do that represents their fear of the existential threat represented by people who are doing civil disobedience, right? Mm-hmm. It scares the bejesus out of them, and they have to go and threaten you with 25 years in prison to try and... That's the threat. That's the perceived threat. And I guess that should make you feel better as a climate activist that you certainly have the Koch brothers' attention, right? They are worried that you're going to win. Is that a fair argument?
Absolutely. And if these bills are, in fact, challenged, if the constitutionality of these bills are, in fact, challenged and it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, it's going to be very, very interesting to see... particularly how a fellow like Neil Gorsuch rules, because he'll have to choose between the ideological interest of trying to defend polluters and the general idea of that you have to defend the First Amendment, because if you don't defend the First Amendment, laws like these can be interpreted and turned around in a way to attack members of his ideological tribe, and he might not like that. So it'll be interesting to see what path he chooses if this ever gets up to the Supreme Court.
So the whole question of retribution or a more aggressive response on the part of moneyed powers. Basically, that's what this is, right? It's money pushing back against climate activism. You were telling me before, DR, about a different example of this sort of response that happens through the SEC, a much different environment, right? In corporate annual meetings, right? Tell me, what's the deal there?
Yes, the Washington Post recently reported on new guidance by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which basically is intended to sabotage efforts of shareholder activists to, among other things, pressure fossil fuel entities to, you know, make clear how they intend to reduce carbon emissions. So for example, the Washington Post cites a, quote, March 7th letter to the socially conscious investment firm Trillium Asset Management, sponsor of a resolution aimed at EOG Resources intending to get that oil and gas company to make it clear how they'll reduce emissions. The SEC said the proposal would, quote, micromanage by probing too deeply into matters of a complex nature upon which shareholders as a group would not be in a position to make an informed judgment, unquote. So this is part of an overall effort by the SEC, the Trump SEC, to try to limit and block shareholder activism, not just on issues related to climate change. The Washington Post notes that the SEC basically allowed the parent company of Dunkin' Donuts to block a shareholder proposal that would require the board to assess the environmental impact of the company's use of K-cup pods. So it's this overall effort by the SEC to basically say that shareholders only have so many rights. They don't really they kind of have rights, but when it comes to trying to use shareholder power to affect change, well, the SEC is basically saying not so much.
Not so much. I mean, the way I read it, it's almost as if the SEC is saying that the shareholders don't have the brains to understand the implications for the business of these topics that they're talking about. So the idea of micromanaging something that is beyond, you know, something that the stockholders can't quite comprehend is condescending and belittling. If I was a shareholder, I would be very upset by that. I mean, I think that the whole concept of shareholder activism cuts a lot of ways, right? Because this guy who is Trump's sidekick, right?
He was Carl Icahn.
Carl Icahn, right? He's shareholder activist, but he goes in, he wants to sort of kick all the corporate managers out and cut the company up and, you know, basically do financial things by being whereas then there are activists that are interested in social issues, which I think may be what they're trying to address here, right? By getting too deep in the weeds, the complex nature, they're not in a position to make an informed judgment. Boy, that's either gaslighting or condescension. I'm not sure which.
Exactly.
Well, I tell you what. What next corporate meeting I go to? I mean, I like to buy enough shares of an Exxon meeting to go to an Exxon meeting, right? Because they don't let you in. If you buy one share, you can't get into the stockholder meeting, can you? Do you know any of that stuff?
I think you would need a healthy amount of shares, but this effort by the SEC does seem to be does seem to have been launched in part in response to efforts by Exxon shareholders who for the past 10 years or more have been pushing to try to get Exxon to clearly delineate how it intends to reduce carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. And if the SEC now basically is saying that companies like Exxon can basically quash such shareholder activism, then basically, Exxon can continue to get away with saying, well, hey, we're for a carbon tax, leave us alone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I would just say in passing, there's an organization here in the Boston area, and I think the pronunciation of the acronym is CERES. It's CERES. And at mm-hmm. least I know the first, maybe you know all of the five words, but it's corporate environmental responsibility or something. CERES is a full-up, serious organization here in the Boston area that attempts to help corporations become more sustainable, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think they do it at some level through assisting this kind of shareholder activism. Is that your understanding of what they do as well, right?
I believe that is my understanding, that is what they do in part. I think this named the Coalition for Environmentally Responsible Economies.
Okay.
And obviously this would presumably hurt their efforts as well.
Yeah.
It basically goes to show you, when people say, when people say that there's not a dime's worth of difference between, candidates and presidential elections, hey, elections have consequences, severe consequences, permanent consequences, and don't you ever forget it.
That's right. And so let me just, to your good point, DR, let me just say, November 2018 is coming. It's only, 7 months away. I mean, please, mm-hmm. please put on your walking shoes and practice walking to the poll once a week so you know the way. And it's very important that everyone vote. And everyone mm-hmm. wants it. This is going to be a big year. I mean, all mm-hmm. your friends are going to be voting. So it's a good thing to try and do.
Remember that slogan from 50 years ago, Nixon's campaign, this November, vote as if your whole world depends on it?
Well, there you go. Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the other topic that I wanted to touch on, DR, is at first blush a little bit outside the climate purview, but I think you can make a case that it demonstrates a connection between climate activism and other kinds of activisms that are mutually reinforcing and supporting. So with that kind of a lead-in, let me say that I think that climate hawks ought to be supporting and cheering on the teachers who are on these spontaneous sort of wildcat strikes. Now they've done it in West Virginia. I think they're in Kansas and in Kentucky, where the teachers finally say, enough of your tax cutting. We're turning down the temperatures in the classrooms. We're only open 4 days a week, and we all have to drive Ubers at night to put food on the table. And they're mm-hmm. insisting that the states, these sort of deep, bright red states, raise taxes in order to pay for education, because that's a societal good. Did you see mm-hmm. any of that kind of stuff?
Yes, it's been a wonderful thing to see. I mean, we always talk, and people have been talking for decades about the extent to which this American society doesn't really value teachers, and the fact that the old saying about how we pay athletes millions of dollars, and we basically pay teachers peanuts essentially, and it's good to see this effort by teachers to push back and to fight back against this nickel and diming of the future. I mean, again, you just think about, the fact that we pay teachers so low, and the fact that teachers are forced to, buy supplies on their own out of their meager salaries, that is a testament to a society that is sort of, lost its balance in terms of priorities.
Yeah, and I think that, from my understanding, the teachers, of course, like I think it's Kansas or West Virginia, they were ranked 49th in the nation, right, in mm-hmm. teacher salaries. But the mm-hmm. and that's important, because it's not just about sort of the income of the teachers. It's that you want to attract good people, mm-hmm. and you can't do that when you're 49th and that low teacher pay goes hand in hand with cuts to the general support of education, right? There's mm-hmm. no new class. There's no new textbooks, right? They don't have the computers, they don't have what they need to do the right thing, to do the teaching job they've been asked to do. And so they're more, another way to frame it is that the teachers are striking for their students to have better supportive education. And part of that is a more reasonable, competitive salary for the teachers. But that's not the central issue, I think. I get
to that point where you talk about how it's difficult it is to hire quality people when you're paying them that low. Why doesn't Trump support these strikes? After all, he believes in hiring only the best people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's this. I want to make the connection between climate activists and these teachers, because the teachers are teaching science and rationality and reason and the, you know, civic virtues that we are, you know, as climate hawks, as the whole society needs to make advances. But there's the idea we've talked about before of intersectionality, this connection. I think the other interesting thing that we should be supporting as climate activists are the gun control efforts. But we should recognize that it's most clearly highlighted in the Parkland shootings down in Florida, that the glamorous, so to speak, violence of the assault weapons we spend a lot of time talking about, but we don't have the similar focus or the similar exposure to the sort of chronic low-level handgun violence that happens in many communities and needs to be equally addressed and equally considered to be a horrific thing. So there's these connections of and support for that is synergistic. It will come back to help climate hawks. So on the one hand, you know, so for both of these topics, the teachers and the kids down in Florida, I mean, it's the correct thing to support, but it's also something that will reinforce the solidarity across the spectrum in order to make all good things happen together, right? Because the gun lobby can't do it on the gun lobby needs the act. The climate activists needs the teachers, and the teachers need everyone. We all need to be with, because no one group is strong enough on its own to carry the day. Is that a fair statement, DR?
But when those groups are united, they can have change. Or, you know, do I have to quote it again?
No, who said that? Tell me, please. I don't think it could be said often enough. It's
Well, it wasn't Michael Douglas and it wasn't Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, but it was a favorite friend of Mr. Trump, right?
But Frederick Douglas.
What did he say?
Power concedes nothing without a demand.
Right. So until you go and insist on your fair share of the salary, right? That you should get paid equal to everyone else in the organization. I mean, those are all things that are mutually reinforcing that will lead us all to a society where something like addressing climate change is obvious and not debatable, right? Anyway, so
absolutely,
that's my take on it. We got to stop there, DR. Let's say that we will put up links to at least some of what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the show on Facebook at /massclimateaction, along with a lot of other interesting stuff. So you should what is it, follow? Not like anymore. You follow. So if you still have a Facebook page, follow Mass Climate Action, and you'll get lots of little tips. You can listen to our show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, etc. So we'll close the way we always close, DR, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for your wisdom.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.